Tomorrow, part 3 of the Exempt Trilogy.
Chapter 1. Intrigue. Time never ceases the march to the morrow, wondering what my meeting with Mary Pinochet Meyer will bring. Mary seems to me to be the key to unlock all those doors that remain hidden from view. Her ex-husband, Cord Meyer, is a top CIA official heading up the Mockingbird program that allows the CIA to control all media, both visual and print, therefore controlling the people and their perception of reality. Mary was also involved with President Kennedy. The secrets she holds seem to be at the forefront of all the intrigue going on in DC and involving me. We left our betrothal party, which had to have been the event of the year in Boston. Maggie told her mother she would drive me back to the hotel, and we left. Father and Mom said they would be here soon.
Richard, you seem deep in thought. What is it? Maggie asked.
Oh, nothing, dearest. A meeting Monday morning about business.
Business? On Monday here in Boston. With whom is it, Teradyne?
No, dearest, something else.
At MIT, can I go with you?
No, dear, you cannot attend. Tomorrow is the only time I can see this person in Boston.
What person? Don't keep secrets from me. Is this person a girl?
My darling, a matter involving the Kennedys. They asked to keep it confidential. Please do not tell anyone of this.
You have too many secrets. In Newport, the police officer, and a phone call you had to make. What is this all about?
Dearest, all I can say is I am asked to do this for the president. It must be confidential. Please trust me on this. Come up to our room. Be with me. You were with hundreds of people today. I barely saw you in that forest of folks.
Yes, that's true. Do you know what all they asked?
Sure. Where did you get that beautiful dress?
No, silly. They asked about you, how we met, who you are. I answered the same questions hundreds of times. I should have written a handout for them. It was fun, though. I thought I would die when those horses came trotting in with the carriage laden with food. What a vision. It will take mana from heaven for Mother to outdo today at our wedding.
Once we are in our room, nothing else matters, except we are alone, in love, and deliriously happy. The knock on the door startled me. It was 6:30 a.m. Maggie had left at 1. I recalled I told room service to bring coffee and toast at this time yesterday. He is here now. Excellent. Thank you. Please place it on the table. Works out well. There is time to walk around the harbor before church services at 11 a.m. The Drexels are meeting us at Old West Church. My father was asked to speak. I am confident the message they hear will be very different from their church. Dad gave me a copy of his text to read and retain. Our duty and responsibility as Christians. We must first understand what is meant by the word. Duty. From do, that which is owing, au faire du, did, past participle of devoir, latur debere, debitum, cf. Char debt, is a term that conveys a sense of moral commitment to someone or something. Moral obligation is the sort that results in action, and it is not a matter of passive feeling or mere recognition. When someone recognizes a duty, that person commits himself, herself, to the cause without considering the self-interested courses of actions that may have been relevant previously. This is not to suggest that living a life of duty precludes one from the best life, but responsibility does involve some sacrifice of immediate self-interest. Our first duty, moral commitment, is to God and our Lord, Jesus Christ. How do we do this? The Word of God guides us. Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, although he may die, yet he shall live." John 11:25. The word believe is mentioned 131 times in the Bible. This repetition underscores the importance of this word. What is meant by this phrase, believe? Many Christians think that if they believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, they are saved Christians. Even the devil and demons believe in Jesus, so we must dig into what is meant by believe in to see what is meant for us to do. To fully understand the importance of what believe in means, we must first go to its root. The New Testament was written in Greek. The Greek word for belief is pistevo, which means to adhere, to support or maintain loyalty. B. To hold fast or stick by as if by gluing or fusing. With this understanding, now look at what our Lord Jesus Christ says in John 11:25. I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever adheres, remains loyal, holds fast to me, although he may die, yet shall he live. Jesus said in John 14:15, if you love me, you will obey what I command. What did Jesus Christ command of his followers? To have no other gods but God the Father, and to love each other as you love yourself. To love one another is probably the most misunderstood phrase in the Bible. What does love mean? A simple but very concise meaning of love is, don't hate. In the Greek, love has several precise definitions. We can infer from what Jesus said that his meaning was philia, or friendship. It is natural affection, like that felt by parents for an offspring, and describes relationships within the family. In our daily lives as Christian men, we must understand his command to love each other as yourself. Love also is a correction. We must correct our faults before we may correct others. How can the dutiful father fix his child if he does the very thing he demands his child not? That would be taken as hypocrisy and create resentment, not love. Resentment is the foundation for all rebellion and discord within the family. When Jesus said, "We must do unto others as we do unto ourselves," when we understand that correction is a vital part of that command, we as Christian men must correct ourselves, our family, our neighbors, which includes our community and our nation. Herein lies our duty to God. We must hold fast, stick with Him, and correct, love, ourselves as we correct, love, those around us. If we as Christian men would truly adhere to Jesus and obey His commands, the wolves would be driven from power over the lambs of God. Do you accept this responsibility? The second duty, moral commitment, we Christian men have, is to our family. Before we can accept our Christian duty to the family, we must know who our family is. Christ has told us the answer, "For whosoever shall do the will of God, the same is my brother and my mother." Mark 3:35. Our duty is to all the members of the family of Christ. When Christian men understand this command and work in unity with their Christian brothers, those that are of the family of the devil will not be over any of us. The Christian family must be headed by men with virtue, noble in character and deed. When a noble man leads the family will follow him out of sincere respect. To be noble is defined as possessing, characterized by or arising from the superiority of mind or character, or ideals, or morals. If we are to be sincere men of Christ, we must be noble. Sarah, Abraham's wife, addressed him as "my lord" because Abraham was a nobleman of God. How many of our wives would address us so? We are living an extraordinary time of spiritual warfare. Christ has told us, essentially, those not with him are of the family of the devil. John 8:42-47. 42. Jesus said to them, "If God were your father, you would love me, for I proceeded forth and came from God. Nor have I come of myself, but he sent me." 43. "Why do you not understand my speech? Because you are not able to listen to my word." 44. "You are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer initially, and did not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his resources, for he is a liar and the father of it." 45. "But because I tell the truth, you do not believe me." 46. "Which of you convicts me of sin? And if I tell the truth, why do you not believe me?" 47. "He who is of God hears God's words. Therefore you do not hear, because you are not of God." We today live when most of those who hold power over us are not of God. They do not hear His words, nor do they desire to do so. They want what their father wants, and do what their father does. You know them by their deeds. Now, Christian men must do what our Father in heaven wants of us, and be not deceived. Amen. Father's text profoundly affects the congregation. There is a silence in the vestry when he finishes. Later, we are in front of over 200 members lined up to shake hands with this truth teacher. Our families enjoyed a fabulous brunch at the Ritz. The day was splendid, the sun shining through crystal clear skies, the harbor bustling with activity, many taking their private boats out to enjoy the sea, breathing the fresh breezes of springtime. Life seems without concern until my thoughts go to the morrow. This memorable day came and went as if in a flash. Now it is time to leave. We said our goodbyes for now. Mom is crying tears of joy. Father is quiet and thoughtful. William, the same. Almost as if they wondered what tomorrow would bring for their children. Perhaps the words my father spoke opened some doors best left closed. I retired, thinking only of Mary. Monday morning at 6:30 a.m., the server brought my coffee and toast. I showered, dressed, then read the morning paper with butterflies churning in my stomach. What does she want with me? The river of time must have come upon a dam, slowing the flow to a crawl. Every minute seems an hour. Why call only at 10 a.m.? Father called at 8, saying they are on the way home now and will see me tonight. Hours later, it seemed, the clock struck 10. I called the number.
Mary answered immediately. Richard, can we meet now?
Yes, where do I meet you?
Richard, unlock your door. I will be there in a minute.
How? Are you in the hotel?
Just unlock the door.
I had no time to call the colonel. The door opened, and Mary Pinochet Meyer came in. Mary, does anyone know you are here? Were you followed to the hotel, to my room?
Richard, come sit by me and listen. I spent many years with these CIA people. I know their methods, habits, contacts, and how to avoid them. Don't worry. Nobody is aware I am here. All my belongings were checked for bugs. Most found were disabled. The ones I left operational were given to others unknowingly. Those dogs will follow the wrong fox. Richard, you were at Hyannis Port. After your visit, my access to Jack was cut off. It had to be something you said to the family. What do you know?
Mary, I was advised not to speak to you. How is what I know have anything to do with you being here?
Richard, you either know too much or not enough. Both are serious problems. You have access to both Jack and Robert. This can be helpful for them. I now have no way to contact Jack, and there is important information he must have. Can you get this to him?
Mary, since I first met you in D.C., my life has been under scrutiny. My house, my office broken into, my phones tapped. Now, you want me to get more involved in your schemes? Why would I?
To protect the president, she replied. You care for the Kennedys. You care for the conditions the people of color live under. This I understand talking to Jack. He can help with those people's plight if allowed. He has many enemies and is making more every day. He has those on his staff, not his friends. When he intervened in Alabama, it caused a stir in Washington among some powerful people.
What vital interest does the CIA have in Laos, Vietnam, and the rest?
Richard, don't be naive. Money is the interest in all things. Money is derived from resources, oil, gold, food, drugs. It is all the same. Empires are built upon the resources from Southeast Asia. Why do you think the French fought so long to keep it under their control?
What about the military? They certainly don't want unnecessary war.
Richard, I do not have time to give you a history lesson or an economics course. Heed the words General Eisenhower gave upon leaving office. Beware the growing military-industrial combine. The military wants the power to control the world's resources. The industrialists want to make and sell them the weapons to accomplish this objective. A very neat and tidy web of interests with the CIA their principal instrument. Presidents come and go. These people and their minions will be there forever.
Mary, that is true. It is in line with research I am doing now on who controls the drug trade around the world. Also what General Smedley Butler wrote, war is a racket. How can I help?
You can help me communicate with the president. You are the only safe way I can now. He must be cautious. Jack suffers from a war injury. His back causes him excruciating pain. At times, so bad he has a difficult time standing. They have him on medications. That is what concerns me. My friend, Dr. Timothy Leary, at Harvard, working with Dr. David McClelland, a Yale grad with a PhD in experimental psychology, is heading up the Department of Psychology and Social Relations, a fancy term for a mind control program. They developed a new mind control drug called LSD, an extract of psilocybin mushrooms. Leary, experimented with in Mexico. The department at Harvard is a CIA operation. Leary told me they plan on giving this drug to President Kennedy. It will be prescribed to help his pain. The real purpose is to control him. Jack does not know of this program. I am the one who introduced Leary to Jack. Now, I cannot contact either person. They are off limits. They will use these drugs to have him sign off on anything they desire. he will be in another place in his mind. Do you understand the implications of this?
Mary, I do. Is your ex, Cord Meyer, behind this?
Richard, I don't know what Cord is up to now. He is in the middle of every nasty business. Cord is devoid of emotion or concern for those he believes beneath him, which includes most. They will stop at nothing to prevent me from passing this information to Jack. If they knew I told you this, you would be at risk. You must never tell this to anyone except Jack or Robert Kennedy. You will put them at serious risk. When I say risk, I mean life or death. These people don't play games. Richard, I must go now. I will find a safe way to contact you again. Do not attempt to contact me. With that, Mary left.
I need to call the colonel with this, but now I don't trust making a call from my room, so I went to the lobby looking for their payphones. Colonel, Richard here. I need to talk, not on this phone. Where?
Officer Shepard in Newport, drive there and located him. He will arrange a place to meet this evening. I will let him know what is up.
I decided to check out now and drive, figuring it will take me about 2 hours. I arrived in Newport just past 1:30 p.m. I phoned from a cafe I had stopped to eat, the Newport Police Department asking for Officer Shepard. I told them, I am a friend he is expecting. The desk officer took my number. All I could do was wait for his call, only taking 6 minutes.
Hi, Richard. Colonel asked me to have you meet him out at State Airport. Go to the General Aviation Terminal. He will be there by 4:20 p.m. It's in Middletown. You can't miss it.
Another 2 hours to kill, might as well have some of that apple pie I see in the case on the counter. The General Aviation Terminal has a loudspeaker broadcasting ground control radio communications. It is interesting to hear conversations between ground control and pilots landing. They are directed at which taxiway to use and where to park. A little after 4 p.m., I heard a voice calling ground control, who I recognized as Colonel. I went outside watching his plane taxi to a parking spot a truck led him to. The first person out of the plane is Vanessa. She looks beautiful, not just beautiful, but glamorous, I thought. Out came Colonel. Even the way he walks shows authority.
Vanessa saw me and came running. Prince Richard, how glad I am to see you, as she threw her arms around me, her breasts pushing into my chest, kissing me ever so lightly on the cheek.
Colonel is right there with a scowl on his face. He did not want her to get too friendly.
Come on, Richard, let's take a drive.
Where to, Colonel?
Drive on over to the beach. Vanessa wants to take a walk on the sand while we talk. Shit, Richard. What did this dame say? Why did you not call me before you met with her?
Colonel, when I phoned her at 10 a.m., as she asked, she was in the hotel, told me to unlock my door, and was inside in a few seconds. I had no time to call.
Shit. How do you know she is not followed?
She said she is aware of being monitored and had someone check all her belongings, found devices, and deactivated some. Others were planted on other people so they would be followed. She told me the dogs would be following the wrong fox.
Smart girl, what else?
She said, what she told me is dangerous. I should not tell anyone, or they could be in danger as well. She said, never try to contact her. She will find a way to contact me. Then asked me to be her contact with President Kennedy. She is removed from any clearance to see Kennedy. I relayed to the colonel all she had told me about Timothy Leary, a Dr. McClelland of Harvard, and how his mind control department is a CIA operation. Colonel, a drug tested, there is LSD, a powerful hallucinogenic substance that someone will prescribe to President Kennedy. The drug will enable them to control his actions and sign off on the war in Southeast Asia. She said they could take control of the president's mind with this drug. He is already on daily medications for severe back pain and will be willing to take any prescription they tell him will relieve his constant pain.
Did she say who is behind this?
No, I asked her. She only alluded to the fact that some of his advisors are not his friends.
Do you know where Mary lives?
No, Colonel.
She is in danger with this knowledge. A walking bomb. Best stay well clear.
How do I tell the president?
Richard, you still have contact with the police sergeant, correct? Do you trust him with your life? That is the question you must decide, because even I cannot protect you if this gets out. What about that FBI agent Robert Kennedy assigned to watch you?
She knew I would be in Boston for the event, but I made certain she could not find or follow me. I do not trust the FBI.
That is smart. You cannot afford to trust anyone you don't know intimately. Richard, I had your home phone checked out. There is a tap. Do not use it except for social calls. Your family is not privy to all this, are they?
No, sir. You are the only one I will talk to about this.
Good. Keep it that way. Find a secure payphone and call me this Thursday evening. I have some things to look into. Let's get Vanessa before she freezes.
I drove Vanessa and the Colonel back to the airport and headed home to Wake Forest away from all this intrigue. But first, a stop in Alexandria. I calculated that it would take about 8 hours from Newport Airport to Alexandria. Now, 6:17 p.m., I will be there around 2:30 a.m. I have the keys to my office. I will rest there, be at Violet's house by 6:30 a.m. when Sergeant Porter is leaving for duty at the White House. Alexandria's streets are deserted at this early hour, only the occasional taxi or police car in view as I pulled into the parking garage near my office. There is a security man posted at the reception desk. I knocked on the glass front entry door to get his attention, and he came to the door asking who I am and what I wanted. I told him my name and company. He asked for ID. I opened my wallet and exposed my driver's license. He unlocked the door. Kind of early for you, sir. The colonel had purchased a leather sofa for the inner office, which I almost dragged myself onto and immediately was fast asleep. Shortly after 5:30 a.m., I rose, washed my face with the cold water in the sink, then sat down to write the letter to the Kennedys. President Kennedy, Robert Kennedy. This morning I was contacted at my hotel in Boston by Mary Pinochet Meyer. She came to my room to tell me a serious matter that she begged me to relay to you. Dr. Timothy Leary, who Mary introduced to you, is associated at Harvard with Dr. McKelland. He heads up the Department of Psychology and Social Relations. That is a CIA-funded mind control program. They have developed LSD, a powerful hallucinogenic substance, an extract of the psilocybin mushrooms. Someone is going to prescribe this drug to President Kennedy supposedly as pain relief. The real purpose is to gain complete control over the president's thoughts and actions to force him to sign off on troops for their desire in Southeast Asia. She did not say who was involved, only that some of your advisors are not friends. She also indicated this was a grave risk for the president. Your servant, Richard Martinson. I sealed this in an envelope addressed only to Robert Kennedy, then drove over to Violet's house, making sure I am not followed. The lights in the kitchen are on. I knew that Sergeant Porter was up. He saw my car pull in the driveway as I approached the front door. He opened it, saying,
Richard, it must be important for you to come here at this time.
Yes, sir, it is. The matter is most urgent. I ask you to deliver this letter to Robert Kennedy this morning, please.
Come on in. There is fresh coffee. It looks like you can use some.
Thank you. Yes, I drove all night from Boston. Now I need to drive to Wake Forest.
Can you stay for a while? Say hello to Vi. She will be up in about an hour or so.
Love to, sir, but I need to get home. I am overdue now. They will be worried. Thanks for the coffee. Give my love to Violet and her mom for me. Now to go home at last.